Hello.
Hello.
How is it? How's it going for you, Dan? How you doing?
All right, I'm here. I got a beer.
Are you here, or is it your evil clone?
Who could tell? Who would know?
Before we get started on this one, I would like to actually stipulate, as we occasionally do, that I feel like well, not tipping my hand too much, I feel like this one's worth watching, especially since it is very available on the internet through many streaming services because of how this movie's release was handled. So, if you have a streaming service, go ahead and look this up, and it probably is there. And then go ahead and watch it before you listen to the rest.
I feel like as a caveat to your recommendation that this is very available and people should watch it because it's worth watching, I should say if in fact we are going to make that recommendation, I think we should on the whole revise our recommendation not to watch Super Troopers because I think I'd probably rather watch Super Troopers 2 again instead of this movie a second time.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Anyway,
And
welcome to the show,
that one's
everybody.
not very available, FYI.
Woo! Super Troopers 2?
Yeah.
I thought it was on one of the streamers. Didn't
A
we stream
HBO.
it? Oh, well, it's HBO.
Well, I mean, as people in Australia will be sure to let us know. It's not the same
Right.
availability there. But
People were having some issues, I gather.
No one had any issues publicized or otherwise. I'm not sure there were a lot of people who went to go seek out Super Troopers 2, but okay, so we are going to disagree on this.
Maybe, maybe. I
Yeah.
mean, for different reasons, I'm sure. But yes, hooray, we're here. We're talking about oh God, this was 2018.
Yeah.
2018's Annihilation, based on the book by I don't know, some other guy. His last name is
Jeff Vanderpump Rules. I don't remember his name.
Vandersloosen, some with a V, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh wait, there it is right there. Vandermeer. It's in
Vandermeer,
the
yes.
thing.
Yeah.
He's
This
got
is
he's got a camel case last name.
it is a very famous popular series
Is
of
it very
books.
famous?
Well,
It's a trilogy, I gathered that.
yeah, but it was on the New York Times bestseller list and in a lot of bookstores. Well, at
I
least
mean, what
I
wasn't though?
recognized the cover for this everywhere. Every airport bookshop you'd go into for about a year would have copies of this laying around.
What did the cover look like?
It had like green plant stuff and dragonflies and crap. And then there was another one that had like a bunny rabbit on it, and then another one that had something else. But they went in the graphic minimalist style. But yeah, I didn't read these books. And apparently, after watching this movie and then reading like differences between the book and film,
It seems that there are a lot of them.
yes, quite a few. According to our bro, Alex Garland, who also did Deus Ex Machina, or Ex Machina. I always want to add the Deus onto the front of it. Sorry, there's no God in there.
So this is the Ex Machina guy. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, and this was his film after Ex Machina. And he collaborated with some of the same people, like Whitehurst was the VFX supervisor on Ex Machina, and he also returned for this. Primary vendor is Double Negative, and they did some stuff there. But this movie is probably more famous for its release catastrophe that occurred.
Oh, was it a release catastrophe?
Yeah. See, Jim Giannopoulos, I want to say is his last name, who used to be at Fox, became the head of Paramount Pictures, and he was basically cutting and trimming a lot of things for releases. You'll remember last year when Cloverfield Paradox or whatever went straight to Netflix.
Right. That's the third one?
Yeah.
Second one? I forget.
Oh.
'Cause there was the other one. There was the bunker one.
Yes, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, that one. Okay, and then the paradox is the other one, but that one I don't remember anything about.
No, I didn't watch it. Apparently it has a very tenuous and loose connection to the other ones and is bad. But I didn't like Cloverfield, so I
The
wouldn't
second one has a
even
pretty tenuous connection as well.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But anyway, that was a movie that was deemed so bad that it was there was no chance of like putting it in theaters. But this movie was deemed salvageable, that they would release it domestically. But because the director and one of the producers, Scott Rudin, refused to alter the ending of this to make it more palatable to audiences and more explicable, a little more straightforward. Because of that refusal, David Ellison, I believe, withheld his support for it or maneuvered it some other way. I don't remember how Wikipedia worded it, but that was the CEO of Skydance, who was a producing partner. So internationally, this was sold to Netflix, the rights for this. It didn't have a theatrical release internationally. And so it did meh in the United States when it opened. I think it opened like fourth that weekend or something like that, but it was not making lots of money, hand over fist or anything along those lines. President Barack Obama named this as one of his favorite films of 2018, believe it or not. And like you, I thought that this had been released like 2017 or something. Like it just it didn't feel like it was last year.
It's been a very long couple of years.
Yeah, so long. But anyway, David Ellison probably sounds familiar because he's the CEO of Skydance, who was in the news the last couple of weeks because he hired John Lasseter and sent out the weird memo that, don't worry, all the liabilities on John Lasseter if he touches any women again. So David Ellison's an interesting 36-year-old in charge of movie company because his dad has money. But but anyway, I disagree with David Ellison's stance to not release this more widely. I do wish there were some changes to the end of the film.
Did you see anywhere what the ending changes they were trying to make were?
No, just generally that they wanted it to be more straightforward and to be explained, like in a very literal, linear kind of fashion, and not.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because I think there's some stuff worth talking about. But I would like to talk about that for a moment because I think that kind of is an overarching theme for this. So I don't know that it was necessarily too ambiguous. I just think there's not a lot of substance to it. So, like, what more would you want explained in the ending?
Well, apparently, I think that they wanted to have the whether or not Natalie Portman is or is not the character at the end. They wanted that to be explained. They, you know, wanted to have a clear motive for the aliens or alien thing, and for that to be a little more tightened up. My personal objection with the ending is I'm fine with the ambiguous way that, you know, Inception top all the way you want, that's fine. And I thought it was pretty clear that the implication is certainly that she is a clone. But or
if nothing else, she is so dramatically modified, she may as well be.
Yes, that as well. But my problem with the whole third act, everything from the lighthouse title card on feels like a student film in terms of pacing and the way it's all kind of like, I know that Alex Garland has said in interviews that he was going for a dreamlike quality to things. And I feel like that can work at some points when you're trying to ratchet up the tension and about the mystery. But when you're supposed to be like going to the lighthouse, and then it's just sort of like a meandering, weirdly paced route to get there, then that part doesn't work as well for me. And her reactions, Natalie Portman's reactions, also feel very student filmy, where the director's like, and now you're amazed, and and now you're totally enthralled by what you're seeing, and now you're struggling, and it's hard, but now you've triumphed, and there's something that's mirroring your every movement, but it's you, but it's not you, And you know, it just didn't feel that well thought out. Also, the one of the things that I really loved about the ending that really takes you out of the moment is when she first walks in that door, and she comes upon the corpse that is all burned, obviously from some sort of immolation, and there is the camcorder set up on a tripod, and she just hits the power on button, and it's like, it has been months in the real world, and like, who knows how long it took inside of here, but it certainly wasn't like the next day. Those things don't have like standby battery time. This is just like a Sony or Panasonic handheld camcorder. I don't know that, but that is a I guess a minor nitpick in the structure.
That's what I thought too. I think, you know, maybe alternative Oscar Isaac could have turned it off, or maybe it just rolled until it filled up the memory card, and then it had an auto shut off or something too. But yeah, that was rather jarring, where she just walks over and pushes the play. It's like, hang on a second. I don't think so.
Yeah. No, it would have probably been more effective had she taken the memory card out and put it into a equipment that they brought with them, as they had done in an earlier scene.
She left her bag on the beach. She would have had to have brought something with her.
Yeah, well, that also didn't make any sense. Like I said, it's like a student film where it's like, and then you you symbolically leave behind everything except for your gun, and like, you are going to go confront your thing, and it's like, but no one would do that. So I don't know. That's the part that's stuff there at the end that I don't really like. But I find the first part of this has sufficient tension and mystery and an interesting, spooky, almost like, I don't know, gothic ambiance to it I enjoy. At least, you know, sitting in my living room with the lights off, watching this last night, I was like, this kind of, like, I honestly thought, based on reviews, that this movie was going to really, like, be a stinker, like, just through and through. But I don't think it is. And that's mainly why I had recommended at the beginning that people should, like, watch this before listening, is because I don't think it's so thoroughly bad that you want to skip it, even though the ending, yeah, I have big issues with.
I would agree with that, but I would clarify the reason for watching it is because I think the majority of the positives that you take away from this film are visual, and hearing us describe it is going to just describe all of the bad things, because there is a lot of really beautiful cinematography and really artfully done staging and set design and all kinds of fun, beautiful environment work, and just the ambiance with, you know, music and tone and stuff like that is very cool and very different in this, especially, you know, the look of the shimmer and stuff like that, and the weird animals and things. I think that stuff is very cool. I think everything that the characters do and say detracts from that, because they all sound stupid, and I don't like any of the words they say. So that's the part that bothers me, and I feel like very little happens that is of any sort of, like, nothing unique or interesting or really terribly consequential happens until the third act, when we get into sort of nebulous alien world, and then you've got your problems with that sort of story there. But I do think this is a very beautiful film.
I'm going to push back a little. I think that the first part of this also sets up the themes of the film pretty well, that this is about cancer. It's about self-destruction. It is about change, and sort of an evolution of who you are. And I think those themes come across very, like, almost very literally, I want to say. Like, you keep having these little conversations with these characters, especially with Janet Jason Leigh's character. What was the Dr. Ventress?
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. Sorry. What did I say?
Janet.
Sorry.
So you got, I guess I get your thematic juxtaposition, but when they keep cutting back and forth to these, like, quick little snippets of, like, Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac sitting on the couch reading, or like, you know, the affair stuff. I'm like, this doesn't give me anything. I don't care. It doesn't help me. Like, what does this have to do with, like, there was no tying it back into literal terms, like because you did X, you are affected thusly in the future, or like there was no like cause and effect. There, I guess you could have you know, the mirroring of themes or something, but it just felt very disjointed when we're seeing all of these flashbacks that seemingly had no connection other than, I guess, providing some theme guidance. But yeah, it's not terribly useful, I find.
Well, it's those flashbacks are interesting in some respects, because there is an explanation of how things kind of got this way, because when Natalie Portman is talking to Jennifer Jason Leigh outside of the tower, when they're down at, like, I don't know what that was, like the little ground level guard post, when they're talking down there about, like, you know, why would my husband sign up for this suicide mission? And Ventress explains, like, oh, well, this is, it wasn't a suicide mission. You know, he wasn't suicidal. He was self-destructive. And it was because of something in his life. And the thing is that he was self-destructive because he knew about the affair and didn't, he wanted to kind of destroy himself because he knew that his wife was having an affair.
I don't get any of that. I find that nonsensical because he's a soldier and he does what he's told. He's not like, oh, really? There's aliens and I might die? Oh, I guess I should go home now. Like, that's not, there's no opportunity for self-preservation if he were in a happier marriage. He's a soldier. He does what he's told.
Yeah, but none of these people that Ventress is selecting for this mission are drafted into it necessarily.
So she just went through and picked a bunch of people with screwed up lives and then sent them in to die.
Yeah, because nobody's coming back. So
so again, I mean, I sure, maybe, but the theme of self-destruction or whatever is not really there. She just made a judgment call that his life was kind of crappy back home and said, "Fine, you're okay to die."
Well, yeah, but I have to imagine that, like, you can resign from duty or whatever. Like, it doesn't, he didn't necessarily need to go on this mission.
I guess, but, like, the point remains that, like, the soldier's job is to go into places where they might die because that's their job. And right. Somebody has to do that.
Yeah. One thing I didn't like about the flashbacks is that I knew that she was having an affair with that guy from the moment we met him, because the way that they introduce him into the story is like he comes up to her and she doesn't want to talk to him, but they're very familiar with each other and they talk about how long it's been and stuff. And it's like, okay, so you guys did something. And then he's like, oh, but my wife is having a party. But she's even more put off by trying to go to this wife's party. And it's like, well, obviously she feels shame about something that involves a wife. And then sure enough, go forward, I don't know, an hour and 20 minutes. And then there's the flashback that confirms that they were in fact having an affair and she felt shame over it. And she wanted to kick him out. And he's like, oh, the person you hate is yourself. And he's just like, no, I also hate you. Which kind of made me chuckle, which is kind of an inappropriate
very
chuckle.
Stupid lines of dialogue. Yeah. there's a lot of dialogue in this that is redundant or just very basic. I feel like like another draft of the dialogue version of this script could have improved it a lot and just added made it more tonally line up with the, you know, what they're trying to do visually and thematically, because they just felt like very, I don't know. They felt. I'm trying to think of a kind word for it, but they did not feel like real characters with serious emotions that were really conflicted about things.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, I kind of have a difficult time connecting with Natalie Portman in most of her roles, where she is. I don't know how to describe it. Like, I think she's a good actress in a lot of ways, but sometimes there's this weird thing where you feel like you're watching someone acting like on a stage or something. Like there's this other level of disconnect between you and the performance that is occurring. Mm-hmm. I would compare this in some ways, I would compare this to Arrival.
I think it's an apt comparison in terms of a tonally unusual film with an interesting style and sort of ambiguous and nebulous alien potential thingy-mabobs happening.
And also the sort of nonlinear way of unfolding something in someone's life, etc.
I mean, that one certainly played with the nonlinear format artistically, whereas this one is just like, we're nonlinear because if we played this linearly, it would be incredibly boring.
Yeah, well, in that one, there was a time element, and in this one, it is nonlinear, like you said, because it would be boring, but not just because it's boring, because they want to withhold the essential details.
But you know she gets out alive from the beginning, because mm-hmm. she's being interviewed by the guy from The Martian in a hazmat suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Benedict Wong, who you might recognize from Doctor Strange, among other things, but
oh yeah, that's right, he was he's the helper guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't mind that, because for me, whether or not she lives at the end of the film doesn't matter, especially when you start seeing all the weird stuff with mutation and cloning. It's like, obviously she's not the same person that she was at the start.
Yeah, and they kind of subvert the whole survival thing too a little bit, so that's cool, that's fine.
Yeah, like one thing I liked about cutting back to that is you could see some weird differences in some of the things that were in basically Natalie Portman. You can see an infinity Mobius strip tattoo on her interior of her left arm.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't have that at first. She has a bruise there in her flashbacks as she's going through it. And then over time, you see that Gina Rodriguez's character, Anya, has that tattoo. And then that tattoo appears on Natalie Portman later in the process of the film. So there's like this weird sort of transference and morphing and refraction, as Tessa Thompson's character says, of one thing from one place into another thing from another place.
I guess I missed that. I kind of just thought they put a big 8 on her or something because she was like a subject.
Yeah, no, that's Stranger Things. But this is, but it was a weird, interesting detail. Also, there's the water glass, which is very similar to the water glass in the flashback of how she came across her missing husband. I liked the reveal of the missing husband, because at first you're watching it thinking, is she just having some weird delusion that she sees her dead husband? Or like, is this actually him? Or is this some projection or whatever from the Shimmer? But it is a creature of some sort that, whether or not it's her husband, is unclear at the time. And it is destabilizing and having a seizure and spitting up blood in the glass.
There was part of that reveal. I don't know if it was a pacing thing or just a tone thing, the way that it didn't really feel like there was much of a definitive break between the scene before, the events before, and she started painting, and then Oscar Isaac just sort of appeared there. That I think it did aid that feeling that maybe it was a hallucination or a dream, but it never really had a moment where, I don't know, maybe it could have used a music change or something that sort of signify like, no, this is real and things are serious and very unusual. I mean, you just kind of like watch this play out, and then suddenly she's getting uncomfortable because he's just sort of standing there and being weird, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And even that never really necessarily signified that we are in the real world now and strange things are happening. It could just be like, okay, her dream / hallucination has gotten weirder, and she's having a dream that he's dying, and is this her like having a hallucination or a dream about like trying to come to terms with the fact that he died? Is this symbolic or something? And it's like, no, this is real still. And then they're in an ambulance, and then the SWAT team is there. So, like, that the scene, I don't know, maybe it was editing or something, but that one just didn't really work for me very well. I feel like they could have done a more suspenseful or more interesting reveal to say, like, hey, this guy you thought was dead, which she didn't even really think he was dead. She just, like, got no communication for a year, and then she just turns around and he's standing there. Like, that could be a very, like, startling, shocking reveal if done a different way, but it was just kind of like, what is happening? We don't really know. And it's like, well, all right.
Nah, I disagree. I like it, especially from the over the shoulder perspective from Oscar Isaac, because that also makes it seem less like a jump scare gag of all of a sudden he's in the room or something. That we are seeing something that might be real because it's from this perspective, from this point of view. That Natalie Portman wouldn't be seeing over the shoulder from Oscar Isaac while she's painting that wall.
Maybe part of it was like when she turns around, like you expect the run up and hug and then like give him a kiss and then like hug on and hold for real tight or whatever. But then at some point you expect her to back away and start talking a million miles an hour going, oh my God, where have you been? What happened? What's going on? Why aren't you talking? Why do you feel so weird? And she's just sort of like staring at him.
Well, but that comes immediately after in the kitchen scene when they cut to the kitchen.
But they're having like a regular sort of like marital spat conversation. She's like, well, why can't you tell me where you went? And not just like a like, holy crap, you just turned up out of nowhere. And that is incredibly weird and not the way this is supposed to work. She just sort of accepted like, yay, he's home and trying to have a conversation. And he's just being kind of obstinate. And she's like, well, tell me where you were. And he's like, I don't know, I can't. And then you're off into the bleeding and stuff. It didn't feel like it had the urgency of like, my husband has been missing for a year and then suddenly he's in our bedroom and being weird.
Well, she hasn't observed much of his interaction. And she also, as we find out later in the film, had suspected that, or at least believes that she knows that he knows about the affair. So maybe she felt guilt or something and didn't want to immediately throttle him. Over this, but I do like when she's confronting him about it, when she finally gets over her initial happiness, she's like, this is really messed up that you actually weren't here and you didn't say anything and there was no communication and you don't remember anything about your mission and you can't tell me anything about the details and all this other stuff. And she basically only stops this line of questioning when he has the little bit of blood inside the glass and starts seizing. But I don't care for the military introduction scene with the ambulance. That felt so gratuitous and unnecessary. You could have had all these military guys just show up at the hospital and like quarantine them and take them out of there.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about stuff that wasn't explained that could use a little bit more clarification is... literally, how did he get there? Did he walk from wherever the hell that lighthouse is to their house?
I mean, I don't care to know the answer.
I feel like there's something in there that would sort of get us closer to, not necessarily stakes, but like what's potentially at risk with the stuff that comes out of the shimmer, because like, I don't know, did somebody like, did a sick soldier stumble out of the shimmer and suddenly discover that he has the ability to like teleport himself or like think him into a location? Like, did he stumble out and his mind is screwed because of all of this sort of mutation stuff, but he focused real hard on one of his strongest memories of his home and his wife and suddenly he was in that place? Like, is that a thing? That is a capability of the effects of this thing, or are we just supposed to think like he's just like totally screwed up and he literally just walked home?
I mean, either of those are plausible because we haven't seen the limits of what this alien technology is capable of doing.
They're plausible right up until like the ambulance scene, because at that point they just sort of let it drop and then those sort of things never come up again. So it's not even like, oh, it could be ambiguous that this is a thing that is possible with the effects of the shimmer. It's just like, yeah, we're not going to talk about that anymore. So like they don't do anything with it. So I can't give them any sort of credit for like putting that in my mind.
Okay. I mean, The main thing is that this connects her to this base where they're both taken, and to Dr. Ventress and the study of her husband. Now, I don't know. One of the things I was a little disappointed by is they didn't really seem to be studying him. They just kind of had him laying inside of the little plastic tent inside of his room.
Yeah, they stabilized him. I mean, I guess, I mean, even her, like, she was in quarantine until she talked to Jennifer Jason Leigh for a little while. And then it's basically like, okay, you can go hang out on the, you know, the deck and, you know, go to the buffet or whatever with everyone. But it didn't really, you didn't get a sense like, you guys are locked down in here. Like, this is high security stuff. It's just like, all right, well, you're cool. You know, well, feel free to wander around. And then Oscar Isaac is sort of the same thing. Like, he's in a hospital bed, but he's not, like, being... Well, I mean, there's a person watching him in a hazmat suit asleep against a wall, but there's nobody, like... There's no armed guards and passcodes or whatever to get in. They're not, like, freaked out by the fact that finally one person came back out.
I mean, they... I do think that they should have had more security around him, because that scene where she crawls in to... basically his bedside to see him doesn't really make a lot of sense given the scenario. And
also they did a lot of work to sort of do that, not really over the shoulder, but over the hip of the guy with the gun when Jennifer Jason Leigh was interviewing her, like through the glass wall. You're like, okay, there's military folks here sort of locking everything down a little bit. But then it really just turned out that was just to add some menace to the whole, like, you wake up in quarantine scene.
Yeah. I mean, he's not that mobile, but they don't know why, and they don't know if he would become mobile or anything
like
that.
I feel like I saw better representations of, like, military security in, like Outbreak or something. And you're like, holy crap, everyone's got all this disease in this entire city here. So surround the entire city with barbed wire and Humvees and guns and make everyone stay here until we figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah, also, she had direct interaction with him, but she wasn't under quarantine. And when... she sneaks in when the guy's asleep, she can just wander right in there. No locks, like you said, and also go in and out of there without a problem. And we see later on in the film that she can basically just take, you know, a blood sample or a swab or whatever and look at it under a low-power microscope and see the cells doing little light color shows. So... do they not notice that something is weird with him? Like, I don't understand.
They don't have microscopes in their zipper bag rooms.
And also, when she agrees to go on this mission, not that she was offered, but she says she wants to go and volunteers for it. Ventress agrees, and it's like, okay, well, we've got an anthropologist, a physicist, what was the other one? Geologist and psychologist. We got all of our bases covered. And then it's like, oh, but you don't have me. I'm a biologist. And it's like, wait, you guys were going to send a team into this thing without a biologist?
Well, they had no inclination that it might have a biological component, apparently. And also, I mean, it's not really a nit worth picking, but this is the 12th group of people that goes in, and they're just now sending scientists. The other 11 groups were all soldiers. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I don't understand why none of their missions were go inside, turn around, and come back. Like,
grab some stuff, turn around, walk right back out. Yeah, and they tried to, like... gloss over a little bit of that where you cross through the portal and suddenly it's 3 days later. I guess that's the shock of, like, putting yourself in an alien microwave or whatever, and you're destroying your brain cells. But yeah, you would think they would be closer to the entrance than, like, the middle of the whole thing. So grab some samples, take a step back out.
Mm-hmm.
Step by step. You know, do some ropes or
day
something, you know. Day by day. No, yeah,
first start over.
Different. Do the thing that they do in a snowstorm. Like, you put a rope nailed into the ground on the outside, and then you walk through the shimmer, and then you go as far as you can with that rope, and then you walk yourself back out.
Yeah, well, but... And I agree with you, like, 'cause it's one of the things I find implausible. They're like, oh, drones didn't even come back out. And it's like, okay, but like put down like an RC car, and then I guess well no that wouldn't work because the radio signal blocking, but it's like
you get a big cherry picker, yeah, and then, like stick it through the top, back it back out, drive 50 yards down, stick it through the top again, drive 50 yards, like just go around the whole thing,
shake it all about,
shake it all about,
but or just get like a really long pole, like just get a really long pole, stick it in there.
Like that stick that they use in Ghostbusters to get the slime out of the subway. Get one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, 3 years earlier when the radius of the whole thing was much smaller. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, oh, it started and consumed this lighthouse, and then it was expanding and consumed part of this base and the small town we evacuated.
Right, because the initial photo that the park goers provided, it was what, like 100-yard radius around the lighthouse that mm-hmm. just had the shimmer to it, and you're like, that's interesting. You could kind of see the whole bounds of it right there.
Yeah, and so it's like, okay, so you obviously had a much smaller thing that you could have dealt with, and you could have had a mission of go inside and come back out. That could have been the whole mission.
Go get the thing, put it in a lead suitcase, and then study it in small doses or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, like, I don't mean go all the way to the lighthouse, because that was their problem, is they're literally every mission, they're like, we gotta go all the way to the lighthouse. It's like, nope, no you don't.
Just... Yeah, we have to find the origin of the thing.
No, I mean, obviously there's enough weird stuff going on that you just, you can start testing things a little closer to the perimeter.
I mean, even halfway through, they're like, you know, we've got all this this mutation. We've got the DNA mirroring thing going on. We've got just sort of the breakdown and reintegration of all of the different plants and animals and whatever. Everything is sort of just like being disassembled and reassembled in very unusual and interesting ways. And at that point, they basically realize, or they should realize, that if they stay in there any longer, they're going to die or they're going to be irreparably damaged. And they may already have been. So at that point, they go, okay, cool. This is real bad. We should get out of here and then see if we can figure out how to stop it. Like, I guess you would, at that point, take a sample and then, like, try and see if you can reverse engineer what the hell is happening. But really, even in their mission to get to the lighthouse, they're just trying to really discover, I guess, the origin of this thing. Like, there's really no clear... Like, I have an idea as to how we maybe stop or reverse this bad stuff from happening. They're just like, I don't know, let's just go to where it started and then we'll play it by ear or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they're completely in the dark. They have no idea what is happening. Even if they get there and they go, oh, that's the thing that's causing all of this. They still like, what are you going to do next? What's step two? You just like try and come up with something?
Yeah. No, they really need to set, you know, small attainable goals. Because they are like, no, we have to do the whole entire thing. Like, this is a real problem with task management, is that you need to set small attainable goals and be able to achieve them and then hit the next goal and so on and so forth. And it's for a project, not you don't want to make the whole thing into the task.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You got to break it down into individual actionable items.
Components.
Components, as they say.
But yeah, it is just baffling how they conducted this whole entire thing. And I really agree with Gina Rodriguez and everybody, Shepard and Anya and everybody, when they're like, so this is effed. We need to turn around and go back. Because
the original videotape moment where, yeah, they're like, this is bad, we should leave kind of stuff. That was cool. That was kind of a little bit of an Event Horizon moment where they're like, oh, we're clearly in over our heads here. This is not good. We should stop now. But it's also played in a really weird way where it's like, which side's crazy? I don't really know. And, you know, we saw the lie of omission coming back to haunt her from a million miles away. And you were just basically waiting for that whole scene to be over where they're all tied to chairs. It's like, yeah. We get it. Am I the crazy one or are you the crazy one? Well, you're the one tied to the chair, but what's going to happen now?
I loved that scene. What are you talking about?
What part did you love about it? It was... Go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, let's get the stuff at the base out of the way. The they come across a memory card and the like patrol stuff and whatever, but there's no people. There's just some gear and beds, and some of the names are crossed off. And they play this memory card, and in it, Oscar Isaac is looking right at the camera, and Natalie Portman's like, oh, bleep. But fortunately, she made the decision not to tell anybody, so they don't all freak out. But Kane, Oscar Isaac's character, cuts open the stomach of one of the other guys who was on the mission. And at first you're like, yes, Event Horizon, that is what this is. But we see that there's kind of a reason for that, because inside of the guy's stomach are his intestines, which are moving as if they were eels or snakes or something, which is not normal. But then Oscar Isaac touches it, and you're like, okay, so this maybe is a little Event Horizon. They stop watching the thing, and they freak out, and Anya says, oh, well, this is, you know, just a trick of the light. Like, people aren't like that. Like, you know, I've seen, you know, all kinds of stuff as a former ambulance person, driver thing. And it's like, okay, we'll just be in denial about that whole thing.
Yeah, I love the denial. They're arguing about what they saw and what they didn't see right up until where Jennifer Jason Leigh just goes like, wait a minute. This was shot in this building, and she just walks into that room, and you see that the guy sprawled out, like stretched up against the wall, all mutated. That was pretty cool. I liked the way they revealed that. And every time you think like, I don't know, are the people going crazy? Is something weird going on here? It could be either one. Somebody goes like, look over there. There's a person that like their skull grew out of the top of their head and is stuck to a wall. You're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Something crazy is happening here. This has got it real bad, real bad.
Yeah. I liked that reveal, because we see it from the perspective of that wall, of them all entering the pool and then walking down the slope to the deep end. literally going off the deep end. But
There are a lot of little moments, and I guess this is an instance where I can point out one of them. There are a lot of little moments like the dialogue that just feel kind of clunky that took me out of it a little bit, where they could have, like, done a more subtle version to ratchet up the tension. Like when we're in that scene and we're seeing the guy stretching up the wall, and she looks down and sees the knife in the water, and she pulls it out and then like takes a beat and then like has the realization and gets scared and then drops the knife and says, I don't want to stay here. Like that's an example of one of the sort of like clunky moments that goes like, you didn't do that.
Oh, right. No, I completely agree with you. I thought that was unnecessary, because I fully understand that this is where we were in the other video, in the video they had just finished watching, and that this is obviously some guy who had his stomach cut open and all of this crap grew out of him, and he's dead now. And it was the same, you know, shallow pool area as depicted here. We did not need Tessa Thompson reaching into that filthy, filthy water to pick up the blade and stare at it as if she's never seen a knife in her life before.
Even if you wanted to do that moment, like, just show a shot of, like, her face reflection on the water and then rack focus deeper into the water to see the knife down there, and you're done. Like, that's it. Or, that's all you need.
Or you just cut to literally just a shot of the knife in the water. You don't even need to do something as complicated as the rack focus of her reflection. You could just literally be like, oh, look, there's the knife from the video. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to pick it up and examine it was unnecessary. Then, like you said, she delivers the awkward and uncomfortable, poorly delivered line of like, oh, I don't want to stay here tonight. And Ventress has to be like, tough, too bad. We don't have any other choices. It's like, okay. So they hole up in that guard tower, and this is the first of our inspection of samples thing with the microscope, and it's like, oh, look, cells splitting, just like in that cancer video we watched. There's crazy lights happening, and we get some dialogue with Shepard about how, you know, everybody's kind of freaked out, blah, 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 blah. Natalie Portman decides to go down and relieve Ventress. And they have their weird conversation about self-destruction, and about how she thinks it was a good thing that she didn't reveal her connection to Kane to the rest of the women. And I have to say, I don't know how you feel about this, but I really like Jennifer Jason Leigh in this movie. I feel like her last scene in it is a bummer because I don't think it lives up to what her character has been doing and what her performances were like prior to that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But all through this part here, this was all really good stuff. I
think that's a general theme for all of the characters. I feel like they don't really set up or pay off much in terms of who they are as actual characters and people. But of course, Jennifer Jason Leigh is good. I mean, I think this scene still does suffer from some clunky dialogue, just from the whole, like, at first when you told me in that earlier scene that you didn't tell the other girls about your husband, I was skeptical, as noted by the fact that I was skeptical in that scene. But now I agree with you, because I would have been very uncomfortable in that later scene where we saw him on the videotape. That would have been difficult. And it's like, well,
no,
could there have been another way to say that?
My problem is not with the way she says it. I think she actually, the way she says it makes that dialogue almost work.
She does a good delivery of it, but the words itself are just kind of like, what did you just say? That's not, no.
Yeah, well, she's coy. She's not direct with anything that she says this whole entire movie. Everything she says is kind of like dancing around what she really is saying. That's how
this
character
is. It would have been better for her, because she's kind of a little bit of a hard ass and kind of a weirdo in this movie, for her to just go like, you know, good thing you didn't tell them that that's your husband, because they probably just would have shot you right there. Like that would have been, you know, a more in character line that would have just gotten the point across a little more smoothly or something.
Well, I mean, that would have been more explicit, but I feel like it was implied with the delivery of.
Yeah, it was implied. I just didn't like the words she used to imply it. It's not her fault. She did great. It's just as we go through this movie, the script continues to like make me shake my head a little bit.
What I don't like is when they hear a noise and then Shepard comes down and then they all act like they've never used night goggles or flashlights in their lives.
Yeah, and also by virtue of the fact that this is a movie and we need to be able to see things, like we can see relatively well, but the characters are acting like they're in pitch blackness. Like, so there was a sound and she was here and then she's gone. It's like, well, there was a bear. We all saw the bear. We're looking at you. We saw the bear.
Actually,
we don't have night goggles on.
I got to say, when they have that little brief shot of it with the flashlight illuminating it, I was like, what is that, a giant mutated squirrel? Like, it doesn't look super bear-like.
I mean, just based on the way it moves and kind of like what happened, I just get a gathered bear.
Yeah, well, Ventress and Natalie Portman say that it was a bear, but as Anya points out later, nobody else saw a bear.
That part was so friggin' stupid.
I like it. I like it.
All we gotta do is take her word for the fact that a large animal lifted one of your friends and dragged her through a giant hole in the fence. Yeah, she did that all on her own.
Well, Anya's not thinking clearly.
Right. Yeah. And again, they could have, like, if that's the route they want to go, where, like, people are controlling these animals or weird stuff is happening because of one of the other people in their group is betraying, like, then you're getting into, Lord help me for referencing this, but Sphere, which was a terrible movie, but a book I really liked when I read it. But, like, that's a movie that sort of played on the whole, like, it's a monster, but, like, spoiler alert for Sphere from whatever the hell that came out, like, it's actually being controlled by the people who were affected by the alien stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was an interesting way of going about that, and they actually... There was some ambiguity as to what was happening. But in this one, it was just like, no, you were standing there and a big bear snuck up on you somehow and then took one of your friends. So get over it. And the only reason the other people didn't see the dead chick down by the river or whatever is because she went on her own. Nobody else wanted to go with her to go see the dead body. That's why you can't say you don't trust her, because she's the only one who saw the dead body, because you didn't want to go.
Yeah. Also, I got to say, there's a weird pattern with Jaws in this movie. I don't mean like the shark. I mean just... human mandibles.
You mean like skulls on the outside of the head kind of thing with the bear?
Yeah, well, the guy that we see that like goes all fungal in the pool, his jaw is detached from his skull and everything else. And then when we find Shepherd's remains in the forest, her jaw is not attached correctly anymore. Apparently this bear goes after it.
Yeah, she's also got, like, big bite marks on her neck.
Yeah.
Like, she got mauled. But, yeah, there was also later when the other, what's her name, when ties them all to chairs and then the bear finally gets her, doesn't it, like smack her lower jaw off her face?
Yeah. Because it's all, and it's one of those things where I'm just like, is this a, is this some sort of like George Lucas like missing an arm thing? Like, does Alex Garland like have a thing for jaws missing?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it's Alex Garland's fetish or something.
Oh man, it's a little slightly weirder than Quentin Tarantino's foot thing, but they do find they do find Shepard's feet, but they come across Natalie Portman talks the other ones into the other members in out of going back and into going forwards to the beach, to the shore, so that that way they can walk along the shore until they reach the edge of the shimmer, because it encompasses part of the coastline and some of the water, we get a scene from Benedict Wong saying, why did you do that? Because that's obviously, that was BS. And then she's like, you know, I just thought it would like be better for all of us to stick together or whatever. Like, she doesn't even seem to believe it. But they, once they find Shepard and rejoin, they go to the little abandoned town, and we see the flower people, which are these shrubberies that have little flowers all over them that are in the shape of human beings. And this is where we get Tessa Thompson's theory that this shimmer is refracting DNA from one organic being to another, so that the plant, which should not have the ability to do this, can do this because it's receiving, I guess, in some way, the genetic information from some other neighboring DNA. And they decide to hole up inside of a house here. And while Natalie Portman is studying more glow-in-the-dark blood samples, she goes to sleep or something, but then she wakes up and what's-her-face is over her with the gun and smacks her with the butt of the gun.
Yeah, because she stole her locket while she was sleeping or something.
Yeah, and... they're all tied to those cheap, horrible plastic chairs, and they have their mouths...
Which you can basically just stand up out of and break.
They have their mouths covered, and they're bound. They're all three lined up in a row, and Gina Rodriguez is interrogating all of them about what they knew. She says that she found the locket, and she starts asking, you know, brother, boyfriend, husband, and then Natalie... Portman has like the largest reaction to the last one. So she's like, oh, husband. Okay, then you were part of the thing with that guy. And then she asks Ventress if she knew. And then she intuits from Ventress's not doing anything that she knew. And then she asks Tessa Thompson, and Tessa Thompson cries. And she's like, okay, so maybe she didn't know. And it's like, okay, I don't know how you're suddenly an expert on reading these human reactions.
But like, what does any of that prove? Is that the only thing that it could possibly prove is that she lied about her motivations for going to the lighthouse. Is that really like a murderable offense?
Not necessarily, but this is where she starts to suspect that because Kane had cut up that one guy in the video, that something similar is happening. That and because she didn't see Shepard get killed, that she thinks that maybe these people who are lying to her are involved in some capacity. So she's super stressed out because earlier we saw her staring at her fingers and then she didn't want to tell anybody, but now she tells them that she could see her fingerprints moving whenever she looks at her fingers, so she can feel stuff moving inside of her. So she's freaked out, but she doesn't want to cut herself open, she wants to cut them open and see if the stuff is moving around inside of them. And this is where we hear Shepard calling for help. And we're all like, that's not possible, because we saw dead Shepard. And it's like, did they reanimate Shepard? And sure enough, Gina Rodriguez wanders out of the scene and finds out. Because in walks the bear that doesn't have skin on its face, which is a charming affectation. I liked... the bear thing, and I liked when it's sticking its head in between them in the chairs and sniffing around, and opens up its mouth and you can hear the screams from inside of it, kind of like some sort of demented parrot or magpie or something. But because it's not articulating anything. It's not like suddenly speaking as if it was Shepard. It's just sort of has the like cry of help from her inside of it. Presumably, as they theorize later, that this creature might just absorb the final moments of terror out of its victims.
Yeah, man, can you imagine that? You're all alone being killed, and then this giant thing that's killing you absorbs part of you and then carries that around with it forever. Can you even imagine what that would be like? Yes, we can imagine. We just watched it.
I don't enjoy Tessa Thompson's hippy-dippy scene where she wanders off after this, but...
Where she goes flower child?
Yes, literally. But I do like how this scene is shot and paced. It's tense. This bear is unlike a normal bear because it is not interested in eating them for meat or protecting its territory. It seems to be sociopathic.
I was waiting for somebody to go, "It smells fear, don't react," or something like, or
Natalie Portman says that. She says, "Don't react to it," and it's like,
yeah,
based
but
on
why?
Yeah, literally, like, what evidence do you have? Like, it literally walked into this room. You have no idea what motivates it. You've never seen it do anything other than kill Shepard last night. So how would you know what makes this thing tick? Especially since everything here is a mutated form that's been cross-connected with something else. And that gator that came after you should not have chased after you by any stretch of the imagination, because that's not what they do. Everything here seems to be a little sociopathic, including this bear, which is not really interested in going after them, even though they're all tied up. It wants to provoke a response somehow. Maybe it needs to absorb fresh, new screams of help to lure no one else into. But it, or Team 13 or whatever. But they unfortunately have Gina Rodriguez come back into this limping, like, "Oh, you can't get rid of me that easy." And then more stuff. And then Tessa Thompson gets free. And then
it could have been better if she said, like, "Get away from my friends," and started shooting at her.
Well, that would have not made a lot of sense. What I thought was weird about this is she was basically going to vivisect all three of them. But now that the bear is going to do it, she's upset? Like, what? Like,
nobody kills my murder victims.
It doesn't make any sense. But because otherwise she would have just shot through all of them. Because they're all just tied up, and they're, it doesn't matter if they're in the way. But she very clumsily gets mauled, and Tessa Thompson gets free, and Natalie Portman is being attacked by the bear. But instead of the immediate mauling and wounding and maiming that it does to Gina Rodriguez, for Natalie Portman, it's like, I'm gonna poke you with my nose. I'm gonna nuzzle you a little. I'm gonna put my little muzzle on you.
Maybe she had treats in her jacket or something, and the bear wanted one.
It's one of those really annoying things in a movie where it's like, we can't have this character die, and we need to have this other character die. So this character is dispatched swiftly, and then this other character, suddenly the bad guy that dispatched the other one swiftly is now incompetent. That seemingly is what happens here, because the bear is just like, poke you. I poked you.
The
I poked you in the shoulder.
It's a James Bond villain. Anyway, he's going to tell Natalie Portman his entire plan before killing her.
Yeah, but they Tessa Thompson unloads the semi-automatic? I don't know guns.
I think it would be fully automatic based on what she did there.
Yeah, well, she blows the crap out of that thing's head, and it is dead now. Now, they're all free, and they put a plastic sheet over... Gina Rodriguez, and this is where Vertrez says she's going to get going, because this is all effed up, and she doesn't want to delay.
I'm mutating from the inside, and I want to make it to the lighthouse in one piece before I completely change and become mm-hmm. something else.
Yeah. Which is the me that started this mission, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's bad logic, but I could buy it from a character, I suppose. What I'm confused by is the other two characters not saying, like, well, hang on, maybe we should stick together and we'll go with you or something, because, like, you're in that deep. I don't see the other two of them going, like, yeah, this is too much for us. We're going to wait here.
Well, also, they don't really have a... They're not in a good position if she left. This is mainly to separate them out, because they want to have Ventress go do her thing. And they want to have this moment with Tessa Thompson and Natalie Portman, and to have Natalie Portman be utterly alone. Because it wouldn't be as dramatic if all three of them wandered to the lighthouse. But, and again, I'm not critiquing the book. I have no idea what happens in like terms of party splitting or whatever. I'm literally talking about this movie, which has a completely different structure than the book. So, I don't know if fans of the book are going to be like, no, it makes total sense because the thematic symbolism of whatever, but like in this movie, it's tactically unsound. They have the next morning.
How did they not even in this movie do the thing where they're like, we're a team of scientists, but we're going to send you in with one soldier who's going to run things, and you guys are going to butt heads the whole time, but eventually you'll work together and save each other's lives. Like,
you mean the Abyss strategy? But
I've never seen The Abyss because you can't see it anywhere.
Oh, damn.
I mean, that's literally every movie that has like some sort of like The Rock has.
It's a cliche. That, which is why I mentioned The Abyss. But they wake up the next morning. They have their little goodbye here, where Tessa Thompson is like, you know, everybody's fighting this change and fighting this stuff, and I don't want to fight it. Like, everybody thinks it's bad, but what if it's not bad? What if it just turns you into bushes? And then she wanders away. I don't like this scene. I think it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I know what they're going for in terms of like, oh, well, it's dream. Like, she rounds the corner and then you don't know where she disappeared to. Could she be one of these flower people? And it's like,
yeah,
I guess, like,
it's the sinking of the Titanic where somebody is in the cold water and they're like, you know what? I'm just going to take a short little nap here. I know we got to wait it out and we're all real cold or whatever, but don't worry. Like, you know, I'm really tired. I'm going to take a quick nap and then I'll wake back up and then we'll get rescued and then they die. Like, it's one of those scenes, but it's with flowers.
No, Dan, that water's too deep. You can't wait it out. But yeah, I don't like flower thing, and it doesn't make any sense how she's like more rapidly transforming into a bush, I guess, because you see all the like the veins and like branchy system vininess inside of her as she's wandering
away.
I'm
okay with going with this idea that she's like she's weakened, she's kind of like giving up, and she's like turning into the skid of this mutation or whatever, saying like it's fine, like, you know, I'll become part of this whole collective giant large single organism thing that's living here, like I'm okay with it, like take me now or whatever, and then wandering off. I did also like that at this point you basically confirm like, oh, so the bushes and the flowers were not just mirroring the DNA of the people that wandered through. All of these plants are dead people, which is kind of illustrative of how many people were in there, got pretty far, and then didn't make it much further.
Well, there were more dead people over by the lighthouse, arranged in an interesting pattern.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. It's not... Okay, and this is where the movie gets kind of weird, because we get, like, a couple shots of her, of Natalie Portman, like, wandering through the woods with a backpack by herself, and it's like, okay, I guess this is to show, like, time has elapsed from traveling from one location to another, but this is where we get the lighthouse. And the lighthouse stuff, like, ugh. Like the...
Can I ask you a VFX question before we get into the lighthouse?
Uh-huh.
So do you remember the tracking shots where they're real wide of this the beach where you've got the giant crystal trees and she's walking on her way to the lighthouse?
Unfortunately, I do. Those crystal trees look like garbage.
Well, the thing that I thought was the most interesting is that there's foreground crystal trees and there's background crystal trees. And as soon as she's about to cross one of the foreground crystal trees, where I was like, oh, I wonder what the refraction is going to look like with her through it or whatever, they cut to another angle where she is just coming from behind a crystal tree. It's like, oh, this was a rendering problem and they just cut around it. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah, well, maybe. But it wouldn't have necessarily made it any better. I don't feel like those trees were integrated into that. It
didn't feel super planted on the ground, but at the same time, like, how do you sell that realistically?
Feeling planted is what you want in a tree.
It is, unless your tree is made of glass, and then you kind of want it to be able to scoop it off the sand pretty easily.
No, and I know they want to have this surreal, otherworldly thing, and what could be more otherworldly than, like, these trees have turned into crystal, but they just didn't sell it through execution. So concept is fine.
I just wanted one shot, maybe like a medium shot of her looking at the crystal tree where we can see her, you know, all distorted through the tree with the camera and it looks all cool. And that's all I wanted.
I think
we didn't get it.
No, but what they could have done is build like part of the trunk of one of these practically. And then they would have at least had some lighting reference. Cause a lot of this stuff is when you see those trees in the wide shots, they have these glowy, it's basically like you selected all of the edges and you made them glow. It doesn't really look like as if you had like quartz on set. They're too clear. They don't seem to bend light in a way that also diffuses internally.
Yeah, there was no diffusion at all.
No, so they really don't. They're too crispy. They're too crunchy. They're too glowy. I don't care for the trees.
Crispity, crunchity, glowity.
Yeah.
Trios.
I was gonna go for rice crystal tree. Is that too much?
Rice crispy trees? Is that what you said?
Yeah, rice crystal treats.
Rice crystal treats.
Treats. Treats.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha. So that's more of a spelling joke.
Yes, that's the best kind of joke for a podcast is one you have to spell. But this is where she does the nonsense thing. She drops her backpack, and it has all of the stuff that she could possibly use, and she just takes her rifle
oh, no,
with her.
My microscope. It's gonna get wet.
My samples. But she she wanders towards the lighthouse, which has this light coming out of the top of the lighthouse, and you're like, oh wow, I wonder what's up there. And then you go inside and there's nothing up there. There's light coming into it, and you're like,
she doesn't even look up. She looks at like the first 10 steps and is like, well, there's some plant life on those stairs, guess I can't go up there.
No. And
it's like in a video game where they put like one minor like environment element on the steps just to sort of like signify to you that they didn't bother programming your ability to walk up the steps.
Yeah, here's a bunch of invisible clipping planes. But the she comes across the burned corpse, and then she watches the video on the Miracle Battery camcorder, and she's disturbed that it's her husband, seemingly at the end of his time there, where he was at his most distressed and most disoriented, saying to the camera, but we don't realize there's somebody behind the camera, saying to the camera.
He's doing a funny accent, too, for some reason.
Oh, God, we didn't even talk about this. Oscar Isaac cannot affect this accent that he's doing. They should not have done that. There is no reason to make Oscar Isaac talk like this. Oscar Isaac should have just talked like Oscar Isaac talks. Like, that would have been fine.
Did he talk like that in other scenes?
Yes.
Did he just not have enough dialogue in those other scenes for me to notice that he was doing a terrible accent?
Well, the accentitude fluctuated. Much in the same way as other actors and actresses have had difficulty maintaining a consistent accent through the course of a film. So I don't know what order they shot it in, what direction he was given that day, what breakfast he had, but whatever reason, he's more Southern when he's dying than at any other point. And
well, he's kind of doing like a sassy kind of like, you know, guy who knows he's about to be like shot in a firing squad or something, where he's like, well, I'm at the end of my rope here. I'm going to light up a cigarette and let everyone kill me. And I end the line for me, fellas. But he's, the whole idea here is that he's like distraught and he's self-destructive and he's at his wit's end and he's going to kill himself. So he shouldn't be so like off the cuff cavalier about this whole thing. Like, you ever see a phosphorus grenade go off? Pretty cool. And then sets himself on fire. Like,
well, that
what?
his attitude made sense to me because he's lost his mind. He's not thinking clearly, and he wasn't even thinking clearly back when they were at the base, which was much further away from this point. The people on this current mission were thinking more clearly than these guys were when they were at the base.
I guess the thing is, it doesn't seem like a breakdown that this character would have. Like, if I'm imagining this character losing his mind, I'm imagining him getting more emotional and more unstable that way, not just going like, I'm crazy soldier boy with a knife and guns and bombs and grenades and stuff, and I'm going to cut people up and set myself on fire. I picture him sort of becoming more sad at the realization that he is at his wit's end and has to kill himself.
What I would have appreciated more would be as if we had interwoven with this his flashbacks rather than video footage of him, and that we had done that more often so that we could see what had gone wrong on his team and their disintegration that mirrored what his wife was going through. Because
if it was really just the fact that, like, people's fingerprints were moving around and they were, like, starting to meld with the environment and, like, feel sick and die and whatever, like, none of that stuff happened to her team such that they were, like, literally losing their mind and suicidal. Like, at no point did anyone have, like, a severe mental snap where you feel like they are now, like, going to be hiding in the woods hunting us or something. That kind of thing.
Gina Rodriguez totally did.
She did that because she lied. She did that because she lied about her locket, not because she's having a mental breakdown. Like, no, how dare you lie to us about being married to that guy?
No, Dan, you're misreading this. She definitely had a mental breakdown. The inciting moment that pushed her into her being extra zany is that she found the locket. But she wouldn't have reacted like this had she not already gone off the deep end.
It was motivated, but it was motivated poorly. So it didn't strike me as a, like, you were losing your mind. It struck me as a, I don't trust you people. You've dragged me into this place. I want to get the hell out of here, and I've had enough of this, and I want to kill you. They really didn't play up like, and again, to use another Event Horizon reference, like Sam Neill, he lost his mind and he was hunting people and going crazy. Like, nobody in this movie went that far because their brains got scrambled by this microwave or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have used some of that. I think it could have used, you know, one of the team members, like, mutating to the point of, like, becoming an animal and going nutso and trying to hunt them.
Okay.
Maybe the bear was one of their team members all along.
No, but
I mean
it probably could have had more impact had we come across a member of the other team that had,
or maybe
not,
just more people, like, questioning their sanity, you know what I mean?
Well, they're all questioning their sanity, because that's Ventress leaves in the middle of the night when it's the least safe to do it, because she needs to get there because she's feeling her mind slipping away.
Yeah, but we don't see any of her mind slipping. She just says it and then she leaves.
This is true. She she seems disoriented at times, but she does not, presumably because of her position, she doesn't really, like, let on that she's as freaked out. But we certainly get it from Tessa Thompson and Gina Rodriguez. And we don't have any with Shepard before she dies, unfortunately. Shepard just says that what they saw on the tape scared her, but she isn't experience anything that makes her feel like something's going on at that point.
Mm.
Like I said, have we had some flashbacks comparing the progress of this team to the progress of another team? Had we seen maybe a member of a previous team who had been so mutated, but still alive, just not ascended to that final stage? Maybe that would have interlinked some of this stuff a little better. Because it feels like she just wanders over and finds this thing. There's exposition that's like, oh, and you're going to be cloned. And it's like, okay. Well, I mean, there's an earlier line from Natalie Portman when she's doing her recounting of events where she says there were some beautiful things, like twinning things and stuff, and we see those weird sort of flora fauna deer things that are moving in synchronous motion, in mirrors of each other. But other than that, we don't get a lot of that mirror action other than this exposition tape. And then the final scene with Natalie Portman, where she's like, you know what? There's a perfectly good hole here. I could go down that. And she descends into the hole just as she hears Dr. Ventress muttering in a cave. And she comes across Dr. Ventress on some sort of platform inside of a weird cave that has a fractal sort of mirror quality to it.
She's in the captain's room of the derelict ship from Alien.
Sort of. Ventress is muttering to herself about things and tells Natalie Portman about how this is about annihilation and like destroying everything and rebuilding something, blah, 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 blah. Doesn't make any sense. The scene does not... the scene is not appropriate for how much gravitas this character had earlier.
If any scene is too ambiguous and doesn't really do service to the movie, I think it's this one.
She just says a bunch of stuff about everything being torn apart and put back together, and then she's torn apart in a scene where she turns into little fireflies of liquid goo that all split like cells, even though they're much too large to be cells. And then they reform into a 3D Winamp plugin, and she is just this. While I like a lot of the sound design and music that's inside of this film, at moments there's this eerie, like almost 2001, barely audible choir thing going on. While I think a lot of that stuff is spooky and adds mystery and all this other stuff, when you get to this fractal Winamp plugin where it's just like and it's just like no stop, what is this?
And the problem in this scene also is that I get into, all right, you're showing me something now, explain yourself. So how does this room / this thing / whatever work? Like, do you need to melt one person to turn it into a portal to another dimension? Or do you just like you melt one person and then you take a drop of blood from another person and then you can make a new person? What does the Winamp thing represent? Does every person that die turn into a Winamp skin and then go away? And it just so happens that since Natalie Portman was there, you're going to make a new clone thingy? Like, okay, but now that there are two clone thingies, like Oscar Isaac had a clone thingy and now you got a clone thingy. How many clone thingies come out of this room? Is it infinite clone thingies? Like, you melt one person and then you get a new, like a one up on your clone thingy, or what? Like, what's going on here?
It's weird in that the doctor is turned into this thing, because it doesn't seem to make any sense. There's nothing.
It's kind of like she got disintegrated and got pulled into like the black hole of the center of the thing. Is this invisible sort of black hole, and like all of the matter that melted went into there and now you can see it or something, but like it was there, maybe?
Unclear. But yeah, because she says it's inside of her, but then it's like, was this
right,
like in a literal sense are we talking about? Like, but
the Winamp skin was inside of us all along.
But she is, there's just like she just disintegrates into this morphing blob thing. I don't know why she wasn't worthy of cloning, but
well, it's because nobody else had a reason to come back. She had a reason to come back, remember?
Oh yeah,
that's what she told the guy in the suit.
Barf.
How come you made it back and nobody else did? Well, nobody else, you know, nobody else really needed to come back. You know, some people were sick, some people were not strong enough. They were all single and lonely and had cancer, and they just wanted to die. And I really wanted to come back because I still really feel bad about cheating on my husband.
My reason for coming back is because I feel guilty about adultery. But
the whole like I owed him thing, like you owed him what? An apology? Like, is that what you're just waiting to apologize?
It's weird because she feels she feels guilt about him going on this mission, not wanting to be with her because she basically drove him away by having this affair. But it seems like their marriage wasn't really working out because he was away anyways on other things that weren't necessarily as dangerous as this, maybe. But like, he had other assignments. Was not around a lot, which is part of the reason why when she's having that conversation with What's-His-Face, and he says, oh, well, you know, you guys don't have a lot in common. You know, even you don't have intellectually, you don't have a lot in common. And it's just like, the F is that. Screw you, guy. But it's true. Apparently, like, their marriage wasn't working, seemingly, but the... And it wasn't, so it wasn't, the adultery was a symptom of their marriage not working, not the cause of their marriage not working. It was the cause of him going into this thing, though, so she feels guilt about that cause. But it's like, so then what? Like, you make him more whole or better or something, or he survives, but then what? Like, your marriage still isn't working. Like, you didn't go to a counselor or something. Like, I don't know. But, anyway, she stares into this thing, which for some reason was recorded on the little glimpses of found footage that Oscar Isaac put in front of his death movie, which I don't appreciate when movies do this, where they're like, here are just a bunch of random glimpses of different things, and then here's the exposition. And it's like, so nobody shoots anything like that, so just don't have it in there. Like, don't have him wandering on the beach as... found footage. Don't have him approaching the lighthouse. We got it. He got inside the building somehow. It happened. Like, there's a door. But we could read between those lines very easily without having to have like a glimpse of it. And we didn't need to see a glimpse of the morphing alien before we see the morphing alien. Like,
yeah. And this is where the movie, I mean, maybe this is me having been conditioned by other movies, but when the movie has played it so straight for so long, in terms of the film language and cinematography and things, when you get to parts like this, where we have this sort of nebulous, ambiguous alien event going on, this is where I start to get like Interstellar. Like, am I folding in on myself? Like, am I seeing two people, two different characters living the same things because they've melded into one and they're doing the same thing at different times and don't really realize that they're both connected and still doing the same thing together. Like when Oscar Isaac was about to set himself on fire and he was saying, like, am I me? Are you me? Like, I half expected, like, cut to see Natalie Portman looking at the camera and then cut back to the camera and then she's the one on camera and then she's watching herself set herself on fire and then Oscar Isaac pops up behind her or something and freaks her out. Like, I'm expecting more weird crap to happen because it's just like, you've gone so straight for so long and now you're getting weird and now my brain is just like imagining weird crap that can happen, but then you're going to go do other weird crap with like Tinfoil Man.
Well, the weird crap that they choose to do, I feel, is more, like I had said earlier, like a student film almost, where it's just like just disjointed scenes. It doesn't feel as nuanced or complex because we just...
At no point does her character have any urgency at all.
No, she is along for this ride in slow motion. Because when she gets down there and she talks to Ventress and Ventress explodes, she's not like, maybe I shouldn't be in this room where this other person exploded. But whatever, she's staring into this hexagonal glowing void and a drop of her blood is pulled off of her face and into it. And then it turns into a humanoid shape. And then she decides to shoot it. And the like six shots she gets off are like turn into little bullet trails that morph through it.
It was a neat, design choice.
Yeah, I mean, that was neat. Just only shooting it six times seemed insufficient. But she turns around to leave at this point and goes back up the hole, and the thing is there. It managed to transport from down there to up there without her noticing.
Mm-hmm.
And she, again, tries to get past it. It's mirroring her movements exactly and preventing her from moving past. It kind of hits her to knock her out, and then she wakes back up again and...
Like twice.
Yeah. I didn't care for it happening twice, because then she does the thing with the door where it smothers her into unconsciousness again. And then they mirror waking up again. And it's just like, what?
It's like, and did it smother her because she was like struggling and it was struggling in the equal and opposite direction and she was like accidentally squishing herself? Like, maybe. Kinda.
Not really.
I don't
know. No. It was like, it was definitely preventing her from leaving. It was just doing it in kind of a similar movements. That's, I guess, how they could get away with that. But it's silly. Because then she gets back up for the second time, she hatches the plan to take another phosphorus grenade that we as the audience didn't even know was there from the bag that he had brought, because he wasn't like, hey, you know what? I'm going to leave all this stuff on the beach. But
we did see him stack up all his stuff in the corner, which was interesting.
Yeah, but we didn't know there was another phosphorus grenade inside of it until she grabs that thing.
Yeah, it was worth the assumption, though.
I guess. But anyway, so her master plan is she's gotten the phosphorus grenade now. And she pulls the pin, and the creature is mimicking her and matching her movements and holding the same grenade as she is. And then she's like, peace out, and leaves the grenade with the thing as it slowly morphs into her likeness. And what I liked about I didn't like this humanoid creature in general. I didn't think that the topology of it was that good. And I didn't think the deformations were good. It's supposed to be metallic in nature, but it just kind of feels like a 1980s like metal, you know, deforming humanoid shape.
It's tinfoil guy.
Yeah, it needed like crinkles or like to have fractal patterns form along pressure points as it bends, like something. Like it just feels like it's just sort of like squishy, in a weird way. And apparently its performance on set was by Sonia Mizuno, who was the one of the android ladies, the one that didn't talk in Ex Machina.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, she falls over, gets back up, turns into the blah blah, and then is holding the phosphorus grenade while Natalie Portman goes out the door. And it apparently decides to stop mirroring her movements at this point, and the phosphorus grenade goes off, and it's like...
Sets its arms on fire.
And then it's like, oh crap, I have firearms, let me touch everything. Oh wait, everything's burning now, what did I do? I'm gonna go in my hole. Oh no, my hole caught on fire.
Yeah.
You know what they say, fire in, fire out. So the lighthouse burns and the alien thing burns and the trees then disintegrate and burn, and then other stuff disintegrates and burns, and the shimmer disappears.
I guess the one thing that doesn't have genetic material that can be modified by the alien is fire, because it's a great equalizer. It's energy, it's heat, and it will destroy aliens. So just... You ever come across an alien, just set it on fire.
Which is weird, because the bullets do nothing.
Fire. Well, it's turning the metal into other bits and pieces of itself.
But it doesn't make any sense, because it's just fire. Like, fire burns when there's fuel for the fire. So was this organic metal thing fuel, or like,
well, it's made of everything, because everything is a reflection of everything, so it's got to be at least like
100%
partially,
fuel.
Yeah, it's got to be at least partially made out of like butane or something.
Yeah, I guess, but it's weird, because it goes down into the organically shaped but very hard and metallic room downstairs, and that all catches on fire, and it's like there is no stuff spreading, just the fire is spreading, so there must be stuff to spread on, I guess. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem obvious.
Maybe the whole thing is just sort of made out of, like, carbon or something, but yeah, it all basically looks like ash anyway.
Yeah, well, it all catches on fire, and they get our conclusion with Benedict Wong, who's all like, yeah, so that's weird. Your story is very strange. And she's like, yep. And then she's like, what about my husband? And he's like, well, he's still under quarantine, and he's much better, and he's lucid now. And she's like, great, I'm going to go see him. And they're like...
When everything died, he woke up. Mm-hmm. So that's not weird at all.
No, it's super normal. Definitely not something you need to do any tests on. Don't draw any blood. Don't look under any microscopes. Don't do anything. Just let him hang out, just like in a room. And so she goes in there with him, unsupervised, and no one's watching this at all. But she's like, oh, so you know, this thing, blah blah blah. Are you him? And he's like, no, I don't think I am. And she's like, and he says, oh, are you Lena? And she doesn't say anything, and they hug, and their irises change color. The end.
Uh-huh.
But obviously, with the irises shifting color, either she is a doppelganger, or she's, as you said, so changed that it would not matter.
what happens next? Does the effects of the shimmer being the mutation and etc., you know, the microwave effects, does that continue to happen from them as a center, because they carry on sort of the alien disease thing? Or is it just like we're just two aliens living in a human world trying to make it on a, you know, on a basic salary kind of thing?
Well, they don't seem to have we don't see it depicted in the film that the creatures that are mutated can in any way cause a mutation. But they themselves continue to mutate. So it is possible that either that is a power that is not discussed, or the mutation is just confined to them for the rest of however long they live. What is interesting, of course, about setting up this married couple at the end, and there's one man and one woman, is that sometimes men and women, when they get together, they have babies. And that is a situation where perhaps that's what this alien wanted all along. It's going to have weird, kind of color-shifting iris babies, but which will go unexamined by any medical professional, as both Lena and Kane are.
Yeah, and then that baby will do something menacing because it's an alien. Mm.
But apparently one of the heavy criticisms is that this movie, since it does not adhere to the book as strictly, does not conclude in a way that you could deduct what would happen next had they decided that this would be a movie series. It would not have followed the path of the other books. Apparently, the other books weren't written when Alex Garland started on this.
Well, he couldn't at least get an outline.
Well, this is the funny thing. He had the manuscript of the first book to start from, and he did. And then the other books were coming out, but he decided not to read them because he didn't want to change his script. And there was also a controversy that occurred. I don't know if you remember this. I barely remembered this. It was only after reading this I was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. But at the time, right when this was going to be released, there was some controversy because Natalie Portman was playing a character that was Asian American in the novels. But in the first novel, the characters don't have names. They are just described by their profession, and they don't have the ethnicities disclosed. That only happens in the later books. So because Alex Garland didn't read the later books, he didn't allow that to influence any of the casting. So he cast Natalie Portman, and he cast Jennifer Jason Leigh, who that character is supposed to be Native American.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was a minor brouhaha over that at the time. But that's just another example of how this doesn't mirror the books and doesn't follow a trajectory where if you were like, if they ever did the sequel, it would not be this, the sequel to this book.
Well, heartbroken.
Yes.
By that.
Yeah. Well, I have some good news for you, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
There is zero chance there will be a sequel to this movie.
Maybe they'll reboot it in 15 years or something if the story is still interesting to people.
Because,
yeah, what did I see here? This this thing made $32 million, cost $40. Not great.
No. Canada, United States, and the UK, I think.
Hmm.
And then everywhere else is Netflix. And they apparently got a few million from Netflix in order to get those rights, but I don't think that covered their marketing budget, let alone maybe just like the gap between their box office and their total budget.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. Yeah. I was.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, I feel like this is an interesting movie to watch. But I can understand not wanting to watch this because at the end you might feel like it's a waste of time if you get to this unsatisfying third act. And it depends on whether or not you find it unsatisfying because of story reasons. Like, I know there are probably some people who are like, I want it literally explained whether or not she is a doppelganger, and I want to know what the plan was all along, which is not revealed through this process. So I can understand why that would be frustrating. But this is definitely a situation where I enjoy the journey part of it, I guess, even in spite of several illogical actions on the part of the characters. I also enjoy that it's a crew of women, which is not something that we see depicted in film a lot. Like, could you think of a movie where this would be an all-female crew doing this?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, well, I just watched Ocean's 8, which is a different story altogether.
Do they turn into aliens at the end?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I still have issue with this. So maybe I need to turn off more lights and turn the sound up louder and just really sort of like try to get into it more. But it was every time somebody said something stupid, it kicked me back out of being able to like lose myself in it. And then anytime I got some unsatisfying nonsense, it made it even more difficult for me. And I'm trying to figure out, not necessarily where to put the blame, but like try to figure out what was the weak point here, because, you know, I'm tempted to say there was some bad writing and bad directing from Alex Garland, but I don't necessarily think that's the case, because, you know, I think he did great stuff with Ex Machina. He's written he wrote Dread, which I think is, again, very simply written, but it's really well written. And like, I don't know. I can't come right out and blame him. And then it's not necessarily editing. His editor is good too. He's done a lot of good things. Maybe they just all sort of like had off days or were constrained in their time or something, but I don't know. It just, there are some weak points in this movie that are too distracting for me to really enjoy the movie as a whole, because I find the dialogue very unpalatable.
It doesn't
draw me in. It doesn't draw me in. It does at best nothing for me, and at worst pushes me away.
Sorry, Dan.
Yeah, well,
that's fine. One final question for you though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it Area X or Area 10?
Area X, representing exclusion.
Mm. Okay.
Do not go. Do not pass. Oh, either that or maybe it's the no, because Area 10 or Area X is the Shimmer area, right? Not their base, right?
Apparently, it is also referred to as the government facility.
Oh, okay. So if the government facility is also part of Area 10, that could be the 10th building that they built, because they all keep getting subsumed by the ever-expanding
But the area Shimmer. The area also apparently includes the Shimmer.
Yeah, then I'm going to say Area X.
Okay.
Zones of exclusion. It's a term.
Okay. Well, that was a productive conversation.
I finished my beer there. Yeah. I think it's a movie worth discussion mm-hmm. because it's trying to do some new and interesting things. And I do like some of the ideas, some of the sci-fi-ish ideas. I feel like they are, I don't know, underutilized, improperly explored in instances, and then the dialogue is bad. But
I also wonder if part of our different opinions on this is because I was reluctant to watch this, and you had suggested we do this several times, and then you picked it to do, and I was like, okay, fine. And so I finally, I just sat down and I watched it all in one go. And then you were watching it like right before we recorded under time constraints and with another person in the room, and it had been something you were looking forward to. I assume you were both looking forward to. And I have to imagine that there was palpable disappointment inside of the room.
Maybe a little bit. I don't know that I had grand expectations for it. I did want to see it or whatever because, you know, it was a movie that some people very much liked, some people very much did not like, and I was curious about. To be honest, the weirdness of it was kind of in line with what I was expecting. It just wasn't. It wasn't also satisfying, I guess. So I don't know. Maybe there were some expectation issues, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, since my expectations were that it was going to be nigh unwatchable throughout, maybe I'm just enjoying it more than that. But this is definitely not my favorite thing Alex Garland has ever made.
Nope.
It's definitely going to be Ex Machina.
In terms of directorial, yeah, he only has a couple directorial credits, two movies and a TV series.
Yeah, and if this was something that was only available for a purchase online or rental, then no, don't watch this. But just the fact that you could watch it at any time on like anything right now because they're trying to make their money back, that makes it more interesting than if it was a little harder to get at.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch it again then. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Well, don't be in a rush. You can give it some time.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Annihilation.
Annihilated. At least it wasn't Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Finish her.